This is an AMI podcast. This is an AMI podcast.
Are you ready?
Go. Let's go.
From AMI Central.
Now circling in the neutral zone.
Here's the pitch on the way. 36 yards for the win.
This.
Here comes a big chance. The shot.
Is this the dagger?
The neutral zone.
This is as good as it gets.
Now, here's your host, two-time Paralympian, Brock Richardson.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of The Neutral Zone. You may have noticed that I am not Brock Richardson. My name is Joshua Watson. I'll be filling in this week for Brock. And I am very fortunate to also be joined today by Cameron Jenkins. Cameron, how are you?
I'm doing good, Josh. Saying that, I can't believe Brock, of all weeks, would take this week off when it's like the height of the Paralympics and it's the height of the show being able to do the Paralympics, because this is what we wanted to do so many years ago. So, Brock, I hope you're enjoying your vacation there, buddy.
Absolutely. And we will be joined by Claire Buchanan in a few minutes. She's just having a little technical challenge. So what is new in the world of Cameron?
Not much. It's been going through a heat wave this week, which has been quite interesting. So I've just been dreaming of palm trees and Coco Locos all week. So not actually drinking Coco Locos, but wishing that I was, since it's so hot out. It would be nice if there was a beach really close by where we could just end up go and lay down on the beach and just not have to worry about life. What do you think?
Yeah, that sounds pretty good to me. Pretty good indeed. And
what have you been up to this week, Josh?
I've been doing a lot of watching Paralympics and trying to keep up with our Blue Jays and a lot of work. My boss is on vacation this week, so I've been doing a lot of opening and closing shifts. So grateful for the work and enjoy what I do, but I am certainly ready to have a day off and just kind of relax, do the show, and enjoy ourselves.
Sounds like a great weekend to me, just kind of relaxing.
Yeah, absolutely. Claire, do we have you yet? Okay, we are still waiting for Claire. That's okay. Let's see.
That's okay. She's fashionably late, and that's allowed.
Absolutely. I'm just wondering, should we get into our headlines?
I think we should, and I can start off with the headlines.
Yeah, let's do that. This week, the Tokyo Paralympics had their first participant hospitalized with COVID-19. The undisclosed foreign athlete was hospitalized on Thursday. And this is one of a total of 13 cases inside the village, including 5 athletes, and another 13 outside of the village, including 3 games-concerned personnel and 10 contractors. Obviously, with the heightened cases of COVID-19 in Japan, this is a major concern, but thankfully, this is only the first person who has had to be hospitalized. I certainly wish the athlete well, and I hope that they are back on their feet soon and can still compete, but this is certainly something to be concerned about.
Judo athlete Priscilla Gagne got the ultimate honor for Canada as she led the Canadian Paralympic team into the opening ceremonies for Tokyo 2020. The Paralympic Games announced this week that it would be adding sitting volleyball to its streaming schedule for these Paralympic Games. This decision was made after the public displayed its displeasure that the event was not planned to be streamed. You know, I'm really glad that CBC came through to be able to live stream the sitting volleyball, and they are going to be the only broadcaster for the first few games to be able to stream the sitting volleyball. It is very popular within the para community, and I'm just glad that they made the right decision to be able to stream the first few games.
I agree. I was watching it, and it is fantastic sport. Canada currently has no gold medals, 4 silver medals, and 2 bronze medals at the Paralympics, Our athletes winning bronze were Aurélie Rivard in swimming, Keely Shaw in cycling, and our silver medalists were Tristan Chernove, Priscilla Gagne, our flag bearer, Kate O'Brien in the cycling, and Nicola Guy Turbide in swimming.
World number one Canadian BC4 athlete Alison Levine had a pretty significant statement this week that resonated with the para community when she went for her first day of training in Tokyo. Alison said, and I quote, "I roll onto the court and completely broke down. It was a very emotional feeling. After everything I've been through, after everything the world's been through, to make it here and be able to do what I love again, it got to me."
That is certainly an amazing statement by Alison, and I know Brock knows her well, and I'm sure she is speaking what a lot of athletes are saying. Now let's check in on our Twitter poll question from last week. We asked you, how do you think the Canadian Paralympic team will do? 67% of you said that they will win more than 24 medals, 16.5% said less than 24, and 16.5% said the exact same. This week's question is quite simple. It's a yes or no question. Have you been taking in the Paralympic Games? I, for one, definitely have, and I'm looking forward to seeing how many others are with me. Coming up next on the program, we speak with 19-time medalist and chef de mission of the Team Canada Paralympic team, Stephanie Dixon from Tokyo, right here next on the Neutral Zone.
And welcome back to the Neutral Zone AMI broadcast booth.
Play ball.
And we are set to get this ball game underway. The first pitch brought to you by Brock Richardson's Twitter account at Neutral Zone BR. First pitch, strike. And hey, gang, why not strike up a Twitter chat with Claire Buchanan for the Neutral Zone? Find her at Neutral Zone CB. And there's a swing and a chopper out to second base right at Claire. She picks up the ball, throws it over to first base for a routine out. And fans, there is nothing routine about connecting with Cam and Josh from the Neutral Zone. At Neutral Zone, Cam J and at JWatson200. Now that's a winning combination. And this Oregon interlude is brought to you by AMI Audio on Twitter. Get in touch with the Neutral Zone. Type in at AMI Audio.
Welcome back to the Neutral Zone on AMI Audio. I am your guest host for this week, Joshua Watson, joined by Cam Jenkins, and making a cameo appearance for this interview is Brock Richardson. Stephanie Dixon is from Whitehorse, Yukon, and has won a total of 19 Paralympic medals in swimming. She is now chef de mission for the Canadian Paralympic team that is currently in Tokyo, and she joins us now. Stephanie, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Good morning.
Good morning. I guess we want to start off by asking you, now that you've seen some of the competitions, what is it like to be in the moment and be the chef de mission for the Canadian Paralympic team?
Being the chef de mission is just such an incredible honor, especially because we are in a global pandemic at the moment. And so I really feel, you know, the responsibility to be there for our athletes, because it has been a really challenging last year and a half, but we've made it. We're here. And I think when we all arrived in the village, it was a sigh of relief and excitement and joy and celebration for even just making it here. And there is a common theme of gratitude amongst the team for you know, Japan hosting these games, especially as they're going through such a difficult time, and just feeling so fortunate. You know, there was lots of countries that weren't able to make it here for various different reasons. And so I think just, you know, there is a bit of a different tone and theme of camaraderie and gratitude and just, yeah, sport is resilient. Athletes are resilient, and we're here and they're excited.
Can you give us a sense of what the village is like over there, given the light of the pandemic?
Well, first of all, the village is beautiful. It is right on the water, and the Team Canada building has an incredible view of the Rainbow Bridge in Tokyo and the bay And the vibe actually feels more or less like any games would feel. There's a buzz of excitement, kind of the buzzes are a combination of nervousness, anxiety, joy, and anticipation. And so that's all the same. The difference is the masks, of course. So you can't see people's faces as much. There's not intermingling amongst the countries, which is too bad because that is some of the most special and one of the greatest parts of the games is getting to know people from other countries and seeing your friends from other games. So being very careful to just stick within a Team Canada bubble or even just having the sports stick amongst themselves as well. What else is the feeling amongst the village here? I'm actually outside right now and seeing people in racing chairs and running along the track that's outside of the building, so people are outside training. It is hot. It is so hot when the mass even increases that body temperature even more. So we have lots of heat mitigating strategies. There was a heat warning for Tokyo today, and we all just were like, no, like, how can it get any hotter than this? But, you know, our athletes are here to adapt. They knew that the heat would be a thing coming into it. They knew about the masks and the measures. Just feeling very diligent to make sure that our presence here in Tokyo doesn't have an impact, a negative impact on the country of Japan, but it has a positive impact. And so the final thing I'll say is that when we're on buses going through the city of Tokyo, I wasn't sure how we would be received, but every person we pass is waving at us, is excited to see us. There are kids lining up at the gates outside of the village, hoping to get a glimpse of the athletes. So that's really exciting to see the excitement here in Japan.
Now, for those of our listeners that don't know what a chef de mission is, can you maybe let the listeners know kind of what you had to do before, what you're doing during, and after the Paralympics are done?
Sure, yeah. The chef de mission is the head of delegation. So I'm the head spokesperson for the team, the head cheerleader, the head support for our athletes, and behind the scenes really giving an athlete perspective to all of the logistics to make sure that our team, who's working so hard for our athletes to make sure these games are possible, has the athlete perspective about how all of the decisions will impact the athletes. And then here at the games, I get to welcome our athletes to the village and beforehand, getting to know them, making sure I'm checking in with them and because every athlete's journey has been different heading into these games. And so making sure that we have an idea of what everyone is going through, that they have the right supports that they need. And then for me, as chef, coming up with messaging. And it can be really challenging to have a message for Team Canada for the Paralympic Games when everyone's journey has been so different. But, you know, the common theme of the Paralympic Games is resilience. It really is, because every athlete has a disability and has worked their way up to be a high-performance athlete, one of the best athletes in the world. And every story is incredibly inspiring and moving. And it's just an incredible story of demonstration of the human spirit, of human resilience and grit. And so I get to share those stories as the official spokesperson. So that's been incredible. And once I come home, we'll just continue to spread the message, because we are getting more coverage than ever for these Paralympic Games. So more Canadians than ever will have the chance to witness and see the incredible performances of our athletes, and hoping that will help get Canada back to sports, because, of course, everyone had an interruption to their life. Lots of people weren't able to participate in sport and activities. So I'm hoping that the Paralympic Games and seeing the amazing performances of our athletes and how they were able to adapt and get through the pandemic inspires Canadians to also get back to the sports that they love.
I feel like the answer to my question could be twofold here, so I'll frame it in this way. What's been the biggest challenge, aside from just getting to the games and the games been on and running, what's been the biggest challenge up to this point? And how have you been dealing with that since being in the village?
Well, I think, you know, the greatest challenge for the athletes this past year and a half was wondering if the games would happen or not. And I think even leading into the Olympics, of course, we want the Olympics to go well for our Canadian Olympians, but for all of us to see the COVID measures in action and to see if they will be able to contain any kind of incidences of COVID that happened. So I think during the Olympics, we were all super excited for the Olympians to see their performances, but really also to watch the COVID measures work and to see the Canadian delegation arrive in Tokyo safely, perform well, and come back home safely with no cases of COVID at all. So I think that, you know, of course, COVID and safety and health is our top priority, and that was the biggest challenge of these games, is waiting to see what Tokyo 2020 was going to put in place. And we are happy with those measures, but Team Canada also put additional measures on top of that, just because we want to do absolutely everything we can, not only to keep Team Canada safe, our athletes who are immunocompromised, but as I mentioned before, to make sure that our impact here has a positive one on Japan and not a negative one or contributing to COVID. And then the second one, you're right, it is a twofold, is of course performance and then having some kind of idea on how Canadians will do at these games. A lot of them haven't competed in almost 2 years. And that's really hard. It's hard to show up after 2 years of not competing to the biggest show on earth and to the world stage. And so we're just getting behind our athletes and making sure that they know that whatever the result is, it is a huge win to be at these games. These games are historic, to be gathering as a global community during a global pandemic, and that they should be incredibly proud of themselves.
We're joined by chef de mission for the Canadian Paralympic team, Stephanie Dixon. She's joining us from Tokyo, Japan, the site of the Paralympics 2020. I'm joined by Cameron Jenkins and Brock Richardson. I'm your host for this week, Joshua Watson, and you are listening to The Neutral Zone on AMI Audio.
So, Stephanie, last week we had the pleasure of having Scott Russell on from CBC Sports. And every week we have a Twitter poll and we ask a question. And the question that we asked was how the Canadian team would do in the overall medal count. And he had some interesting things to say. So we're going to just play that clip for you right now.
I think Stephanie is right. You know, she said a couple of days ago, she's excited to see every one of the 128 Canadian Paralympians on this team compete. There are, I believe, something like 55 Paralympic rookies. She was a Paralympic rookie as a 16-year-old in Sydney in 2000. And, you know, you remember how she performed there, won all those medals. But I think it's to go in with their eyes wide open, knowing that the great victory for these games is for the games to occur. They've been tremendously resilient athletes throughout their careers. They've worked extremely hard to get here. And, you know, as she says that everyone is already a superstar. And I think that's true. And you're right, it takes the pressure off them, but the joy is the ability to be able to compete.
You have never really sent the message that this is about the overall medal count. This is about the process. This is about enjoying the moment, being in the moment. Why has it been so important to you as chef de mission to not focus on the overall medal count at the end of the 2 weeks?
You know, I don't want anyone to get me wrong. You know, we are here for performance. There's no doubt about it. And I'm definitely encouraging all of our athletes to demand excellence from themselves. And in the situation they find themselves in, there are so many things that they can't control. So to focus on the things they can control and know leaving here that they did absolutely everything they could and put it into their performance, because that's how they're going to leave feeling proud. But I think because we are in a time of a global pandemic and because so many countries weren't able to make it here. You know, Afghanistan was set to have its first female Paralympian in history. And because of the terrible situation that's happening there, they weren't able to bring a delegation. So I think all of us right now, we're just kind of seeing a broader context of things, you know, with the global pandemic. And it has affected people and countries very differently. So we're seeing inequalities. We had the campaign come out, the We the 15 campaign from the International Paralympic Committee that's focusing on breaking down barriers and discrimination for all people who live with disabilities. So I think we're just in a time right now, the social climate is to be just more aware of social justice and social equalities. And so there is a bit of a different tone here, because in the times of COVID, it really is miraculous that we're here at all. It really, really is. These games are a gift. And I want our athletes to take in every single moment of that. And I believe that by having that kind of mentality, it will fuel their performances. So we were thrilled yesterday to see two medals. Canada's first medals were two bronze, one track cycling from Keely Shaw, the other in the pool from world record holder Aurélie Rivard. You know, and in Keely's situation, this is her first Paralympic Games, and, you know, her first Paralympic medal, she was over the moon excited. Her performance exceeded her expectations. Whereas Aurélie, on the other hand, she hasn't competed in 2 years. She's the world record holder going into the event. So coming out with the bronze was actually disappointing for her. You know, she was expecting more than that. And so that's going to fuel her going into her next couple of races. So it's still the Paralympic Games. The drama is real. People want to perform. But I think we're just having a bit of a different perspective. And we don't want to put additional pressure or expectation on our athletes who have had so much out of their control in the last year and a half. And we just want them to know we're behind them regardless of the results.
Stephanie, what have you learned when you were an athlete that's helped you become the chef de mission that you are today?
I'm really drawing on my memories and my experiences from being an athlete and what I would have wanted somebody to say to me. I think it's really important that the chef de mission is a Paralympian, because when I was competing, it wasn't the case. And so I'm really trying to connect and have FaceTime with as many athletes as possible so that they know that somebody on the staff who's working behind the scenes knows what it's like to be in their position and is there to listen to them for the highs, the lows, and really just create messaging that allows them to know that we're behind them and we believe in them. I'm just so excited and proud and honored to be able to be in the stands with our athletes. There are very few people in the stands, as we all know, but my accreditation allows me to be there, and I'm bringing the drum that we were gifted from the Squamish Nation with me. And so I think coming from an athlete who feels so connected to what they're going through, and I represent all Canadians who support them, it's really special.
Finish my sentence. These games will be a success if we blank.
These games will be a success if our athletes were able to perform at the best that they can given these times. We arrive back home safely, and athletes feel an incredible amount of pride in themselves and their country.
Well, Stephanie, it has been an absolute pleasure to speak with you today. Thank you so much for lending us some of your very valuable time. We know it's probably early there, and we really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. And everyone can tune in and watch. There are so many ways to cheer on and watch the athletes perform at Paralympic.ca.
And we absolutely will. We are looking forward to it. That was Stephanie Dixon, the chef de mission for Team Canada Paralympic team at the Paralympic Games in Tokyo, Japan. Coming up next, we continue the Paralympic conversation. Stick around. You're listening to The Neutral Zone on AMI Audio.
A message for the Neutral Zone, call now 1-866-509-4545, and don't forget to give us permission to use your message on the air. Let's get ready to leave a voicemail.
Welcome back to The Neutral Zone on AMI Audio. I'm your host, Joshua Watson, and I'm joined by Cameron Jenkins, and we are still working on getting Claire Buchanan. Before we get into some specific sports, Cameron, I thought we would just talk a little bit about that interview that we got to do earlier this week with Brock and with Stephanie. What were your thoughts about it?
Yeah, I think it was a great interview. I'm really impressed with Ms. Dixon as well. I think she's a great chef de mission, and you know, just her confidence and just her energy, I think, is phenomenal for all the athletes that are there. And I was really impressed that, you know, she tries to FaceTime all of the athletes as well, just to see how they're doing and how it's going, and helping them on their journey of, you know, what is the 2020 Paralympic Games.
Absolutely. It's got to be a weird experience for them, having no fans and really not having the Paralympic experience that some of them may be used to if they've been to games before. I totally agree with you. I loved her, just her calm and her sense of enthusiasm. She was grateful to be there. And I think that's absolutely going to rub off on our athletes. And just having that experience of winning all those medals and knowing what they're all going through, it's got to be a help to them.
Oh, it certainly does. She's won, what, 19 Paralympic medals, you know, during her time as an athlete. And that can't help but be a calming presence to all of the athletes there, knowing that she's won that many medals and, you know, she's been through it before. And she also mentioned that she really thinks that the chef de mission should be a para athlete. And I agree very much so that it should be a para athlete. And kind of one other thing that I took from it, only because I used to live out in Whistler, you know, way back in the 1800s, as I like to say, she was talking about the Squamish drum. And that's, you know, Squamish is out in BC in Whistler. And I kind of like would like to get her back onto the show and ask about how long has that tradition been going on, that, you know, a drum has been given to the team, whether I think it's Olympic or Paralympic, and what's the reasoning behind that and kind of the story behind that. I think that would be really interesting to have her back on the show to talk about that.
Absolutely. And of course, if you are watching Paralympics, you're probably doing so through CBC. So we do want to just remind you that not only AMI has coverage, but so does CBC Sports App and CBC Gem. Cameron, let's talk a little bit about the goalball competition. The Canadian women are in Tokyo, and it was a bit of a rough start for them, actually. They went up against the Russian Paralympic Committee and lost 5-1.
Yeah, that was a tough game for Canada, that they lost 5-1. You always want to start off the tournament or start off on the right foot. And unfortunately, they got behind the eight ball and lost 5-1. So, you know, they have a few more games. And the second game, they did bounce back and they won 6-2 against Israel. And I know that Emma Runke, she was the offensive juggernaut in the game, and she was able to get 4 goals. So as of right now, the goal ball for the women's, they have a 1-1 record. And their next game is actually tonight, Friday at 8 p.m. And once again, you know, as you mentioned, I'm watching it on the CBC Gem app, and it's a great place to watch all of the Canadian Paralympians.
It really is. And I mean, it was really nice to see them bounce back against Israel with that 6-2 win. I am really looking forward to seeing them play Australia.
Yeah, that's going to be a great game against the Aussies.
Definitely, definitely. The wheelchair basketball has been kind of a tale of two teams, in my opinion. We have the men's team, which just doesn't seem to have had the tournament that I think they expected, unfortunately. A couple of tough losses there. What do you think about the men's team there, Cameron?
Yeah, you know, they just didn't get off, once again, on the right foot. They lost both games. You know, yesterday's game, that was a heartbreaker. That went to overtime, and they ended up losing that game, you know, just by, I believe it was 4 points. And, you know, the offense, it runs through Nick Gonchin. He had a triple-double in that game, and he had over 30 points. And Patrick Anderson, who we mentioned last week, he's kind of the, well, he is the known as the best wheelchair basketball player in the world. And he had 24 points and 22 rebounds. So that's definitely beast mode, and it still wasn't enough to win last night. So, you know, I think they're in a position now where they're going to, you know, be in anywhere from 6th to 8th place. And hopefully in their next game, they can win.
Absolutely, definitely. It's been tough. I stayed up and I watched most of the game that they played against Spain, and it was just a really, really tough game. It just looked like things were pretty difficult, but then they really bounced back, as you said, and just really, really brought it against the Turkish team. And such an exciting way to finish that game with that 4-point loss. I really feel for the guys on that one. But on the other side of the coin, we have our Canadian women with our good friend Erin Young and Tamara Steves and Mel Houghton and the ladies there. They are looking really, really strong, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely. I know last night's game, they ended up demolishing, I can't think of another word, 61-35. So I think, one of the best players on the team is Katie Dandino.
Yes.
The first game, she had a triple-double. And then last night, she ended up 19 points, 9 rebounds, and 5 assists. So I think when you think of the women's team, a lot of the offense comes through Katie Dandino. You have Erin Young, who's been on our program before, I believe.
She
had a line of, and she was a great interview, and she's a great young lady on the women's wheelchair basketball team. She had a line of 13 points, 10 rebounds, and 10 assists. And then you have Cindy Ouellette. She's kind of, I believe, one of the senior members of that team. And she was 10 of 10. 10 points and 10 assists. So, and one thing that I really noticed about the Canadian wheelchair women's basketball team is their defense. They held Japan to 16 of 62 from the field. So anytime that you're able to hold a team like Japan to those numbers, you're going to win a lot of games and you're going to win it by a large amount.
Especially when you're playing a team on their home floor. That was incredible, that game. They played so, so well. And you're right, the offense really does seem to go through Katie and Erin and Cindy for sure. Obviously, you have Mel and Tamara and Rosalie and the other girls who play their roles. But it's really amazing to watch them play. I'm just so excited to see what happens with the rest of that that competition. I will definitely be tuning in any chance I get.
Yeah. Now, Josh, I do have a question for you.
Sure.
Japan, being in Tokyo, they do have the home court advantage, but with no fans in the stand, do you think that there really is a home court advantage for Japan?
Ooh, good question. I do, but I think that it's a home court advantage because they haven't had to travel. They haven't had to go through as many protocols to get there. They live in the country. They've traveled to the games, obviously, and there are certain criteria to get into the games, but they haven't had to deal with long flights. They haven't had to deal with time changes. And even though there are no fans in the stands, I really do feel like there is some kind of advantage just to not having to travel as far. I know when we have our Cruisers Sledge Hockey Tournament in November each year, pre-pandemic anyway, that I always feel more comfortable playing in that tournament because I'm sleeping in my own bed. I can go home and have a shower without having to worry about how I'm going to get in and out of the tub. And it's just, it's easier. What do you think?
I agree with you in regards to they don't have to travel, so they don't have to get used to the time change. But with no fans in the stands, I don't really think there's an advantage for anyone at these Paralympic Games when you're talking team sports, one going against another. Because I really think, the sixth man or the sixth woman in the stands is so vital in order to be able to lift your team up. It could have been a very different game against Japan if Japan didn't go 16 of 62 from the field. Even if they made, half a dozen more shots, that's 12 more points. And, who knows where it would have gone from that if, they were a little bit better from the field. So it's just that crowd and they're cheering for you. It just kind of brings your energy up. And I think, you know, it really does make a difference.
No, you may be onto something there. That's a very good point. I don't know. I guess we'll see how other Japanese teams and athletes do, see how much of a factor that is for them. The other sport I think we want to touch on, at least for a little while here, is the rugby team. We had Travis Morrow on our program a while back, and I know he was very, very amped up to go and play at these Paralympics. Mind you, I think most of those guys are amped up to play any chance they get. I think they might be a little crazy, to be honest with you. But
just a tad.
And I think you kind of have to be to play that sport, but they've had a bit of a rough tournament themselves, unfortunately. Looks like they're not going to make the medal round this time, but what do you make of how the men have performed so far?
Yeah, you know, they call it murder ball for a reason, that's for sure.
Boy, do they.
I saw, you know, a lot of the game last night, and it was very close. They just lost by a few points last night. You know, I really don't know the strategy behind the game other than I love to see the hits. You got to go from one end to the other. There's a lot of picks to try to stop the other team from, you know, crossing line. One thing that I did notice, and I don't know if it was near the second quarter or the third quarter, the team that Canada was playing, they weren't crossing the line to get another point. They were just kind of wheeling it around. And
right.
At that point in time, I didn't understand that part of the strategy as to why they weren't trying to score a point. But then I think they ended up scoring with like 2 seconds left. And I guess that was the strategy, is to try to score a point where there wasn't enough time for Canada maybe to score another point.
Right. I think what we were dealing with there was, as much as there is a shot clock, if you will, in rugby, I think it was about possession at that point. They knew they were going to win. And I think you were talking about the game against the United States. And so they knew they were going to win. And it was just a matter of sort of wear down the clock. That 2 seconds left try, as they call it, was basically your shot clock was going to run out, so they finished off the play. But I have been really impressed with the guys. I mean, they lost to Great Britain by 3 tries. They lost to the Americans by 4. So even though it says 0-2 on the record, I really feel like the team was a lot closer than maybe the record indicates. And they did go up and play against New Zealand today. Yes, today. This whole time change thing is messing me up a little. but they did go up against the Wheel Blacks from New Zealand, which, very cool name for a team, I have to tell you. And they crushed them 51-36. So that, I think, is a great sign for the future. But yeah, it's been fascinating to watch.
In New Zealand, they're a powerhouse at the end of the day. And I just love, and I believe it's New Zealand, maybe it's a different team where they do the haku at the very beginning of the game. And the haka, that's just yes. So, yeah, that's just so impressive. So I'm just, for nothing to do with their rugby ability, I'm just love when they do the haku at the very beginning. And it's, I can only imagine what it's like when you're actually there to see it in person.
Absolutely. And so the next game for Canada and wheelchair rugby is going to be the 5th or 6th place game, and that's against France. It's listed on the Olympics.com website as being on the 28th at 8 p.m. So I think that is early tomorrow morning, if I remember correctly. Again, you know, time change.
Yeah, with the time change, it's hard. I know that every night at 8 p.m., I throw on my app, and then I pick the Paralympic games that I want to watch. And I flip back and forth depending on what's going on. And they don't call it ping pong, but they call it table tennis. Man, that is something to watch, that table tennis, too. There's a gentleman that it's been all over Facebook or the media, where there's a gentleman that holds the the paddle in his mouth, and he uses his foot to be able to serve the ball. So he kind of flips it up with his foot, and then he, like, it's unbelievable. I was watching a couple of those matches, and what they're able to do with the ping pong ball and how they're able to, you know, curve it. And it's just amazing. I was really impressed with the table tennis as well.
Absolutely. In my case, I've been really keeping an eye on the athletics as well, because that competition is getting started. Someone that I've had a chance to practice with, Charlotte Bolton, was a competitor in the F41 shot put competition last night, and she came in sixth overall, which for her first Paralympics as a university age athlete, I think is incredible. So that was awesome as well. Unfortunately, we're almost out of time for this segment, but coming up next, we switch gears to the mainstream sports world. And Cameron, you're going to tell us a little bit about what it's like to be a fan at a CFL football game. So stay with us. We'll be right back after the break. Welcome back to the Neutral Zone on AMI Audio. I'm your host, Joshua Watson, and I'm joined by Cameron Jenkins. Cam, let's start off this segment, if we can, talking a little CFL football. And before we get to the season itself, because I know you and I are big Argo fans, let's just talk a little bit about some of the off-field stuff, if we can. So a while back, I think it was last fall somewhere, the XFL out of the U.S. and the CFL announced that they were talking about talking, if you will. we talked about it on the show at the time, and I basically said, you know, Randy Ambrosi, wake me when you have something real to say. And I still hold to that because, gee, they've now announced that there will not be any formal partnership. Are we surprised by this?
No, I don't think we're surprised at that at all. I think the XFL kind of needs to be able to succeed on their own first, rather than worry about partnering up with the CFL. And, you know, as far as the discussions go, the CFL has been around for over 100 years. So I'm sure that some of their asks would be like, we don't want to change the three down rule. Maybe they don't want to, get rid of the rouge as an example. So I think, you know, my guess is that when they were talking about joining together, it was more about the rules. And I think that's maybe where it came to a stalemate. That's my opinion.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I also think that if they had tried to make any sort of fundamental changes to the game, like you're saying, switching into a four down league or something like that, I think you probably would have found a government official somewhere sticking their nose in and saying, this is a heritage piece. We have to keep this the way it is. And yet we all know that during the pandemic, the government wasn't prepared to give the CFL any sort of funding to stay afloat. So
Where does the government, if that's the case, where does the government get off saying that, you have to stick around, it's a heritage thing, when the government's not giving it any money that I'm aware of?
Yeah, I agree with you. I am glad that this partnership didn't take place, because I didn't want to hear the government officials trying to step in or what have you, if that would have happened. As you said, they didn't provide any funding for the CFL during the pandemic, and thankfully all the teams have come back. It's been an interesting season. I've seen a couple of games, but it was an interesting little bit of news, and I think it was more a way to get the CFL into the news cycle than anything else.
You know, just going on the positive side, I know with the XFL, when they were around before, they were getting some good revenue from a TV deal that they had. So I think the interest there for the CFL would be if they were to amalgamate with the XFL is about that TV money and, you know, to help prop up the CFL or to give it more of a financial base. And I just don't know with having to change the game, you know, if the money that they would get is a good enough trade-off to change the rules.
I totally agree with you. On another sort of off-the-field matter, it came out this week that the Edmonton Elks are the first team to have a COVID-19 outbreak. You're a much bigger fan of the CFL than I, although I am a fan. Are you concerned about this? Should we be concerned?
Well, there was 14 players, as I understand, with the Edmonton Elks that ended up contracting COVID. I think it's worrisome for the league because they only have so many games that they can play. There's so many teams. And, you know, I think it's down to 14 games total that they're going to be playing this year. And if you have to wait 2 weeks before you don't have any more signs of COVID or at least not be contagious, I think that can be very worrisome for the league. And how are they going to be able to reschedule that game that they were supposed to play against the Argos on Thursday? So, but it seems like it's just been for that one team so far. I think that there's going to have to be a lot more people that end up getting vaccinated as well, because I know that there's been questions about traveling as well from province to province of who's vaccinated and who's not vaccinated as well.
Yeah, that's a very good point. There's been talk in the news recently about a potential fourth wave of COVID due to this Delta variant that's been going on. And I don't know how that's going to work. I've noticed in the early going that the Argos particularly seem to be playing a lot of what appear to be road games. I think they started off in Winnipeg, if I remember correctly. And then was it Saskatchewan or it was supposed to be Edmonton?
Yeah, I think they were in Saskatchewan. I don't think they were supposed to be in Edmonton. I think the first game was supposed to be here this past Thursday, I think.
Okay. But certainly if this fourth wave does materialize, and we're all hoping it doesn't, being a Canadian league, I think, helps us. But provinces are certainly not going to want players from other provinces and even from the United States who come up to play in the CFL traveling amongst the different provinces. So that could potentially kill the season, I would imagine.
Yeah, and I don't really know. I think they're going to have to really look at their COVID protocols and come up with something that's a little bit better than what they currently have right now. And the other thing is that you have to make sure that the players, management, coaches, everybody that's involved follows that. And that's, you know, must be really hard to be able to do as well, because we know how many people are involved just with one team of football. So,
well, absolutely. I think it's a 53-man roster, if I remember correctly, plus all the coaching staff and all the people that are affiliated with getting the team to and from and getting the stadiums ready for game day and all of those things. So it could potentially be a massive issue if it continues, but certainly hoping for the best. Now, you had a chance to go see the Argos when they opened up their home season. I'm curious, what was that like?
Well, that experience for me, it was a little bit overwhelming just because of COVID-19. That was the first time that I was around so many people, because really I've only been around a few people for the past year and a half, and not in a big group. So, yeah, I was like really overwhelmed before the game. Then I started to ease as I was at the game. And Toronto won, so that's always a good thing as well.
That always helps, yeah.
It always helps. And then after the game, you know, I was very much overwhelmed again. So, you know, to be quite honest with you, I'm glad that the Thursday game was postponed because I don't know if I would have gone to that Thursday game. And, you know, reality says that I've been double vaxxed. And if I was to get it, I might get a little bit sick, but I wouldn't have to go to the hospital. I wouldn't have to go to ICU. Yes, I am a person that is also immune compromised. So I think it's just kind of getting back out into life and realizing that, yeah, things are going to be okay at the end of the day.
Absolutely. And we do have to, I think, ease ourselves back into populous areas, but certainly going to and from those GO stations and things is quite the sea of humanity most of the time. Just briefly, I'm wondering, were there any particular protocols you had to follow to get into the stadium?
That's a good question. I think I was a little bit overwhelmed that I just kind of got in there and I don't really remember. I remember pretty much get me to my seat and be around people that I know. So I don't, you know, get the COVID. I went through a security check and I raised my arms, but I don't remember if they took my temperature. Like I said, I was a little bit overwhelmed and just wanted to get to my seat.
Sure. Awesome. Well, unfortunately, we have run out of time for this week, sir, so we are going to have to wrap up the show. I'd like to thank you for joining me, and unfortunately, we weren't able to get Claire, so we missed her, but our producer of the Neutral Zone is Brock Richardson. Technical producers for this week are Jeff Ryman and Matt Agnew. Technical supervisor is Paula Dineen, and our manager of AMI Audio is Andy Frank. I've been your guest host for this week, Joshua Watson. Tune in next week because you just never know what happens when you enter the Neutral Zone. Have a great weekend, everybody. Enjoy the Paralympics on CBC and CBC Gem.
This was an AMI podcast. For more accessible media, visit AMI.ca.